Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Tonight, you'll meet the man behind this music. Marco Benevento will tell us how it feels to hear his song being used every night as the theme music for a radio show.
It's totally weird!
Quiet, you. Not your turn yet. We'll let Marco talk later, and he'll play live with his trio, and yes, he'll play the full version of this song. Speaking of theme music, Adele has just released her new James Bond song for the forthcoming movie Skyfall. Author and Studio 360 host Kurt Anderson has a surprising connection to James Bond, and he'll tell us where Adele's tune fits in the long list of Bond songs. But first... Yesterday on the show, we began a campaign to take back our country from the politicians and put a musician in the White House. Billboard editor Joe Levy nominated Rolling Stones guitarist Keith Richards to be our musician-in-chief, and he actually made a pretty good case for why Keith Richards would be the right man for the job, despite being British and possibly undead.
They say the two things in life you can't beat are death and taxes. Keith has beaten them both. Has beaten them both.
I never thought of it that way, but you are right.
This is a strong, strong man.
Today, we turn to Ann Litt, DJ at our sister station KCRW in Santa Monica, for her nomination. Ann, welcome back. Who would your nominee for musician-in-chief be?
Well, hello. My nomination for musician-in-chief is Patti Smith.
Ooh, good one. Why?
Well, I think it's time for a woman and a mother to run this country, and not that she'd do it, but a girl like me can dream, I hope. I just think it would be amazing to have a president who is a well-read, intelligent artist, who understands people, who knows what children need, who's raised them on her own. You know, she's taken care of sick friends and people in need of help. She understands the difference between religion and faith in something bigger. I think she'd be amazing.
And she would need a campaign slogan. What would that be?
Well, with Patti Smith, it would have to be "People Have the Power."
I was dreaming, in my dreaming.
The song's called "People Have the Power" from Patti Smith, and Ann Litt thinks that should be her campaign slogan. Ann is nominating Patti Smith in our Soundcheck presidential election campaign to be our musician-in-chief. The full line before she hits the chorus is, "People have the power to redeem the work of fools."
I'm so glad you said that, John, because I was going to say that. I think that she has... among the keenest insights of any writer I've ever read, of any musician I've ever heard, about what we really need.
And as you say, she is not just a musician. She is a writer. I mean, you know, author, poet.
Absolutely. She would be our first commander-in-chief who can double as poet laureate.
Ah, so there's actually a, I don't know if the poet laureate is a paying position, but there's potential cost savings there for our country. What would her core campaign issues be?
Well, I thought a lot about this, and I think that Patty would help us bring more art to schools, and I think education would be very important mm-hmm. to her. Literature for all people. I think healthcare would be something that she would focus on, especially for people who are really in need. And of course, I think you and I will appreciate this. I think she will keep funding for the CPB.
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Right.
Exactly. I think Patty Smith loves public radio, as we do too. The environment. Patty Smith grew up in a really rural, woodsy environment, and I hear it through her music and through her writing, and I think that she would work really hard to help keep the environment safe and wonderful. I think she would eloquently stop war mm-hmm. and the economy. Patty Smith says, rock and roll is free. It's about global communication. So I say, what can be better than that?
Well, now, one of a potential president's first major choices is that of a running mate. Who would a Patty Smith candidacy, who would the vice president be?
Well, this is a tough one, but I'm going to go with Neil Young.
Hmm. Okay.
I think Neil Young, in the interest of gender equality, we could have a falsetto-voiced vice president in contract with our very deep-voiced president of the United States. I also know that Patty, when she sings Neil Young's words on her new album, gives new meaning to the song After the Gold Rush.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor coming, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming. The archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s.
Patti Smith's version of Neil Young's After the Gold Rush and kind of playing on the environmental slash ecological theme of that song. And Ann Litt, who joins us regularly on Soundcheck from KCRW in Santa Monica, is nominating Patti Smith to be our next musician, our first musician-in-chief in our Soundcheck campaign, and Neil Young to be her running mate. You can find out all the details, and there will be voting involved once we finish with our full slate of nominees. Just go to our website, soundcheck.org, and much is made in every presidency about the accomplishments of the first 100 days. Really important to hit the ground running and to be able to say in the first 100 days, this is going to happen. What would happen in the first 100 days of a Patti Smith presidency?
Well, I don't have a lot of specifics about that because Patti Smith would want to accomplish everything in the first 100 days. But I think the quality that's going to make her our great musician-in-chief is her patience. And she will be patient. She will write, she will draw, she will meditate on the issues facing us, and I believe she will come up with a strategy, a game plan to propel us forward in a great way.
And who will be there backing her up and serving in a Patti Smith cabinet?
Well, this part was actually a lot of fun to think about because there's so many possibilities mm-hmm. and there's so many people I want to hear from, not necessarily for any specific reason, but I did hear Laurie Anderson speak a few years ago, and Laurie Anderson talked about her work that she had done with NASA.
Right.
NASA had come calling at her door, had come, you know, ringing her doorbell.
She spent a little bit of time as their artist in residence.
Exactly.
The performance artist, songwriter, and violinist, Laurie Anderson.
Well, I thought that Laurie Anderson, because NASA was smart enough to have an artist in residence, it got me thinking. And so the other artists in residence in the cabinet I would like to hear from are Bob Dylan, of course. He's an easy one. Meg White. I think Meg White would have interesting things to say. Yes.
Meg White never has anything to say.
I know. But as soon as we give her the platform, she's going to tell us something that we really want to hear.
Okay.
I also have put Tom Morello in there. I think he'll be an activist, and I think he will make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I also have in my cabinet Bruce Springsteen, a fellow New Jersey native to Patti Smith. I think those two will work well together. They've obviously written one of the classic songs of all times together. And
you
I
mean
think
Because the Night?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see him in the cabinet.
So, interesting that you put Tom Morello in the cabinet. So he would be sort of the political gadfly, I guess.
Yes, he would be.
The guitarist from Rage Against the Machine. So, Anne, do you think a musician would really make a good president?
No.
Well, Anne Litt, thank you for playing our game. But you're going to nominate Patti Smith anyway.
You know what? I would love somebody with her inner compass to be our president. And if Patti Smith would agree to the job, I would back her 150%.
Anne Litt is a DJ at our sister station, KCRW in Santa Monica. Anne, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
And again, check out the website, soundcheck.org, for all the details on our election campaign to put a musician in the White House. This is Soundcheck. CMJ Music Marathon is nearly upon us. That means 1,300 artists performing at 80 venues in New York next week. And this year, Soundcheck is jumping into the fray. On October 19th, let us introduce you to four great acts. The singer and electronic artist Amanda Warner, who performs under the name MNDR. The Montreal-based space pop band The Luyas. The guitar-wielding comedian Dave Hill. And this super funky ensemble, the Debo Band from Boston. At Soundcheck's first CMJ Showcase, Friday, October 19th in the Green Space. For tickets, go to our website at soundcheck.org. Coming up, the musician behind Soundcheck's new theme song is pianist and keyboardist Marco Benevento. Find out more about him and hear Marco play songs from his new album in a moment. We're not restarting the show. It's still Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Keyboardist and composer Marco Benevento has done it all, from the music of Benny Goodman to Pink Floyd to Leonard Cohen. He's played in the post-rock Benevento-Russo duo, in the quartet known as Garage à Trois, and in a Led Zeppelin-themed band called Bustle in Your Hedgerow. He plays piano, organ, and circuit-bent toy instruments that make sounds their creators never intended. Possible that Marco makes sounds his creator never intended. But for Soundcheck listeners, Marco is the guy you hear every night at the top of the show. Our theme music is this song, Eagle Rock. And Marco Benevento is here with his trio to play some of his other music for us live in the Soundcheck studio. This first piece is called This Is How It Goes. This is How It Goes. And that's how it goes when Marco Benevento and his trio play it live, although there are other versions. First of all, Marco, good to see you again.
Nice to see you again, too, John. Thanks for having us.
So Marco's playing our piano. What else you got over there? Pedals, computer, all kinds of gizmos.
Yeah, we have some pre-recorded drum machines and pre-recorded circumvent toys and this looper down here.
And you got Dave Drywitz on the bass and Andy Borger on the live drums.
Yes.
Here in the studio with us. Now, this is how it goes. That's the instrumental version, but there's a vocal version.
Yeah,
this.
Right. This new record is my first adventure into adding lyrics to those melodies. And I sat with that version, basically this instrumental version of that song for almost 2 years. Before I decided to do some sort of syllable singing with that melody that I improvised in the studio 2 years ago. And my wife and I kind of quickly wrote down lyrics to it, just, you know, E's and ah's and, you know, things like that. And we actually, my wife and I did a version of it with us singing it with two of our friends late at night after a night of drinking and eating. And
that almost goes without saying.
Yeah, exactly. And we really liked it. And I was like, wait, and the next morning we listened to it again. And we're like, oh, no, it does sound good. We were right. And then I saw Rubble Bucket play at a festival that we were also playing at. And I had known them for a little bit. And I saw Cal, the lead singer, just rock this crowd. And her voice sounded so good. And right at that moment, we were sitting with that rough version of the song, and I was like, I'm going to call her. And the next day, I got in contact with her. And so we did a version of that with her, and that stuck. That's what made it on the record.
The record's called Tiger Face. It's the latest from Marco Benevento. So that's kind of a rarity for you because, you've been drawn to instrumental music pretty much the whole time, it seems.
Yeah. It's the first time I've ever had vocals on my own record.
Mm-hmm. And it's been released as a 7-inch single. Now, people are saying vinyl has come back, but they're talking about like 12-inch LPs. Are people buying singles?
People are buying singles. We just did a 12-day tour out to Kansas City and back, and the most stuff that we sold was all vinyl, 7-inch and 12-inch. I think people just like, I don't know, they like holding it in their hand, the artwork. The fact that, you know, we're not going to print those, we're probably not going to print them again, I don't think. So they're rare, and
Now, speaking of technology, when you're on these tours, what are you playing? What's the instrument?
Well, I almost brought it in here today. It's a 61-note upright piano that was made in 1927.
A 61-note piano?
Yeah.
So how many? It's missing, what, 27
basically,
notes then?
If you were to take an 88-key piano and shave an octave off each end.
That's what you got?
That's what I got.
Where'd you get it from? Where's this piano from?
I got it in Peekskill, New York. When I lived in Brooklyn here for 10 years, I basically found every piano shop within a 100-mile radius of Brooklyn and emailed them every day, continually called them, tons of places searching for small pianos. And I knew they existed because we played at Largo in L.A., and John Bryan has a couple of those.
Bryan, the producer and film music composer.
Right. He has a couple of those in various little rehearsal spaces and rooms there, and I was like, oh, they make these pianos this size? Are you kidding me? I need to find one. And I found one in Peekskill, New York on our way to play this festival called Mountain Jam, and I got it, and I played it that day at Mountain Jam. And just was in heaven. It was like
so. The benefit is that with 61 keys, it's much smaller. It can fit into, say, a Brooklyn apartment.
Right. It could fit into a van.
Right.
We bring it on tour with us, and you know that's kind of I would think that's one of the biggest problems of being a touring pianist is that you either have to bring your own, huge problem if you have a huge piano, or you have to play, you know, rooms with pianos. That could mean jazz rooms that lend themselves to sit down audiences. Mm-hmm. And our music is more upbeat, and we like to play those crowds that are bigger crowds that are dancing and. Or, you know, on the other side of things, they have rock rooms with pianos that are barely playable.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring my own axe with me. That's it.
And Zachary didn't bring it today.
Well, I was going to, but we were running a little late, and we had to just go in and do it.
Plus, we do have a Steinway.
You do have a Steinway. I'm not going to complain about a Steinway. No.
Okay. So now let me ask you the important question. How weird is it to hear your song at the top of our show?
It's totally weird. It's amazing. I was just thinking, I was like, whoa, when did we meet? Or 3 years ago or something. When I first came here, I would have never have thought that you would have used one of my songs.
More than 3 years ago, Marco.
Was it?
Yeah.
Lord. Yeah. All right. So, yeah.
what does the title Eagle Rock refer to? Is that a real place?
It is. It's in L.A. It's a part of L.A.
Oh, okay. Here I thought it was going to be some, like, Butte or Mesa out in the Southwest or something.
It's actually where we mixed a couple of songs off the record. It's where the engineer Tom Biller lives, who engineered that record, okay. Some of the songs from that record.
The album's called Tiger Face from Marco Benevento. It's out now. The trio is playing on October 12th at the Bowery Ballroom. They're playing here on Soundcheck today. Can we hear the piece in its entirety? We never get past the opening 90 seconds of it, so let's hear... Let's hear Eagle Rock. It's music from Marco Benevento with Dave Drywitz on bass and Andy Borger behind our drum kit, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
That's actually quite a rockin' song when you don't have some damn fool announcer talking all over it. Eagle Rock.
Yeah.
Also known as the Soundcheck theme music. Marco Benevento live at our piano. Dave Drywitz on bass. Andy Borger on drums. It appears, of course, on Marco's record Tiger Face, but also in part at the top of each edition of Soundcheck. And as odd, Marco, as it must be for you to hear your music used that way, it's even weirder for me hearing you play it live because I keep thinking, I'm missing my cue. I got to get in there and start talking.
You should have started talking over our live performance. That would have really thrown me off.
All right, well, we'll hear more from Marco later in the show. And remember, you can hear the full session, including more of our interview, on our website, soundcheck.org. By the way, Marco is performing live at the Bowery Ballroom on Friday night, October 12th. The name is Schaefer. John Schaefer. Ooh, awesome. All these years hosting Soundcheck, I never got a chance to do that. All right. This month marks the 50th anniversary of the first James Bond film, the 1962 classic Dr. No, starring Sean Connery. The super spy, created by novelist Ian Fleming, is being celebrated with a DVD box set, a documentary, and a film festival at the Museum of Modern Art. But even more important, there's a new Bond movie. It's called Skyfall, and it comes out on November 9th, and that means a new James Bond song. This time around, it's by Adele, and we've asked Kurt Anderson to take a listen to it. Kurt is host of WNYC's Studio 360 and the author of True Believers, a novel in which James Bond plays a key role. Hey, Kurt.
Hi.
So, James Bond figures pretty prominently.
Very prominently.
In the novel.
Yeah.
Was he important to you?
He wasn't important to me. He's important to my characters.
Yeah.
That's why it's fiction. But no, they're a little older than I am. They're about 6 years older than I. And so they were adolescents, or young adolescents, just as the moment that the novels were reaching their peak and that the first movie that we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of, Dr. No, came out. So at that Cold War moment when they were just frenzied with adolescent fantasy, it was huge for them.
So did you have to do a lot of Bond-related research?
I did do a lot of Bond-related research. I read a half a dozen Ian Fleming novels for the first time. I rewatched a bunch of the movies and just, yeah, immersed myself in Bondiana for a couple of years.
So what do you make of the new Adele song, Skyfall?
I think it's really good. I think it's the best one probably in decades, since the 80s and 70s. It's also returning, as they sometimes do, to a British vocalist. In the first years, it was Shirley Bassey and Lulu and Tom Jones and all these Brits, and so that's good. It also it has that combination of lushness and loushness and that a good James Bond song needs.
And it has a great James Bond style opening.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to 10. Feel the earth move and then hear my heart burst.
So
that is the opening of Skyfall, Adele's new song to the James Bond movie of the same name. It's Kurt Anderson, as you were saying, a sort of a return to kind of classic Bond sounds. The audible reverb around her voice, very much echoing, pun intended, the sounds of Shirley Bassey.
Yeah, and I think she actually maybe samples a bit of the John Barry original song, one of the original Bond themes at the beginning. No, it takes it seriously. It's not any some kind of
pastiche
or anything. It really is trying to be a Bond song. And I think, you know, it kind of goes with the Daniel Craig Bond movies in being what is, to my mind, a real reinvigoration of the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about a franchise that's approaching its 24th film.
Yes.
So, you know, there has been a kind of sagging middle.
there was a sagging middle. And all for the Bond songs of at the beginning, of course, are memorable. All the Shirley Bassey songs, Goldfinger is fantastic. And then they started getting Oscar nominated for the one that Paul McCartney did, which I love, actually. Carol Bear Sager one that Carly Simon sang. And then there was a kind of drop off into the ahas and Duran Durans of the world.
Maybe we can hear a little bit of some of the ahas and Duran Durans of the world. You like the Paul McCartney
I do, very much, yeah.
Right, from 73. And then as you head through the 80s, you have Duran Duran with View to a Kill, Aha with The Living Daylights, and then much closer to our time, Alicia Keys and Jack White and Another Way to Die. Here's a little bit of each.
Say live and let die.
So that sounds like a Jack White song. It doesn't necessarily
exactly
sound like a James Bond song.
He didn't, it seems to me. I mean, he when it was, Jack White, that'll be interesting. Not so much. It's a little bit like casting the James Bond actor himself. I mean, some of them, no. Some of them, like Sean Connery, like Daniel Craig, perfect.
Mm-hmm. So that little mixtape that we just heard, four clips going in chronological order, would you say as you go from Paul McCartney to Duran Duran to Aha to Alicia Keys, Jack White, that they're sort of getting further and further from the classic James Bond sound?
A little bit. And so the Jack White one is, and it's lyrically very kind of spot on, maybe too spot on. And there was, it seemed to me as though they were trying a little bit too hard to say, I understand I am doing this homage to a great old concept and character and franchise without just embodying it, as I think this Adele song does.
Well, and Adele wrote the song with her producer, Paul Epworth, with whom she's worked very successfully in the past. And they actually, you know, make no bones about what they're doing. There's a quote from the original James Bond theme about halfway through the song, Skyfall.
When
Skyfall.
So Adele, Skyfall, and theirs isn't.
No. In the age of sampling, we can say, yes, this is a James Bond movie without having to be told, oh, yes, this is a theme from the new James Bond movie.
Although, you know, in terms of sampling, that's obviously not a sample. But
no, exactly.
The orchestra.
A quote.
Right. And here again, you've got this big canvas, this big sonic canvas, the way, you know, those great old Shirley Bassey, Diamonds Are Forever, Goldfinger.
Absolutely. Unapologetically. And again, I think perhaps that's more possible today than it was 15, 20 years ago when these pop singers wanted to do just their kind of version of pop music of that moment, but call it a James Bond song, where now, at least she, they, whomever, feels free to really go back and embrace all of the arrangements of yore.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your favorite James Bond theme?
Well, the early ones, when one was just learning what James Bond was, the original John Barry, Monty Norman song, instrumental from Dr. No, I can't get enough of, and I played repeatedly as I was writing this novel. All the Shirley Bassey ones, I guess the Shirley Bassey Goldfinger one is the one that makes me want to sing along whenever I hear it.
Kurt Anderson, start singing.
Goldfinger, he's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch, such a cold finger, beckons you to enter his web of sin.
That is a classic, Shirley Bassey's recording of Goldfinger, notable not just for her inimitable singing, but that blaring, blatting brass section as well.
Yeah, exactly. And at the beginning, I mean, John Barry was a rock and roller, and he did half of the scores for Bond movies. And in that first one, the Dr. No theme, there's this electric guitar, which again in 1962, 63 was almost surf rocky in mm-hmm. what it was doing, and it was pretty cool.
And a sort of pivotal moment for the main character in Kurt Anderson's novel, True Believers, a novel in which the character, the fictional character of James Bond, plays a key role in the development of the people whose lives you follow in the book. Kurt Anderson is not only author of True Believers, but of course host of WNYC's Studio 360. He's been with us on Soundcheck. Kurt, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you, John. My pleasure.
Do you have a favorite James Bond song? Got a funny story about one? Leave a comment on our site at soundcheck.org or leave us a voicemail at 646-493-7939. That's 646-493-7939. Still to come, a primer on Chicago rapper Chief Keef. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Chicago music scene is attracting a lot of attention right now for two reasons. A hip-hop music scene known as drill, and the violence inside that scene. One of the leading figures in drill music is Chief Keef, real name Keith Cozart. Seems like every day brings a new headline about him, and often they're not so flattering. Here to tell us more about Chief Keef is our contributor, Soumya Krishnamurthy. Soumya, good to see you again.
How are you, sir?
Good. Tell me about Chief Keef. Just turned 17. How is this kid in the news so much so fast?
Yeah, he's definitely in the news. So Chief Keef is a Chicago rapper who had built his name regionally in Chicago among a lot of high school students, his peers, obviously, through a series of mixtapes and music videos that were racking up really millions of views and downloads, but very much in a clandestine way, where mm-hmm. the industry had no idea. I can say for a fact, the East Coast media elite had no idea. And, you know, what ended up happening is Gawker, of all people, put out an article that called him hip-hop's next big thing. After that, a lot of us started to, you know, hear the buzz and do a little bit of research and see what was going on in Chicago. But really that seminal moment for him was when Kanye West remixed his song, I Don't Like.
It's the whole sound, that's a sound bite. The media crucify me like they did Christ. They wanna find me not breathing like they found Mike. A girl will run her mouth only out of spite. But I never hit a woman, never in my life. I was in too deep like Mekhi Fife. In that so deep I could have drowned twice. Rose gold, Jesus.
Kanye and his Good Music Collective, Big Sean, Pusha T, etc., jumped on it and really made it this huge hit. And I actually interviewed Pusha, I want to say last week, and we talked about how he found Keef, because I'm like, if I didn't hear about it, how did you hear about it? And he said, honestly, I was trolling Worldstar Hip Hop, which is a viral video hub, happened to fall upon this guy, Chief Keef, loved it, brought it to Kanye. Kanye is a Chicago native as well.
Right.
It just all kind of worked out and the stars aligned. Fast forward millions of views later on YouTube, Chief Keef just signed a deal with Interscope Records, and his major label debut is out the end of this year.
Well, there might be a follow-up question that I'll ask about that in a moment, but let's first hear the song. This is Chief Keef, now 17 years old, from Chicago, and I Don't Like.
Sauce, baby. Sauce, baby. Sauce, baby. No, you're wrong, baby. No, you're wrong,
fake,
baby.
Fake, fake, that I don't like. A snitch, that's that I don't like. That's I don't like. Sneak this up, that's I don't like. Don't like, don't like.
That is what we can play of Chief Keef. I don't like. That's the clean version. Insomnia,
yes.
It's like every other word has been dropped.
Yes.
From this.
It's still catchy, though. Very infectious beat. You know, it's a catchy hook. And I think this notion of I don't like, we all have something we don't like. I don't like this coffee I'm drinking. He doesn't like a lot of things. I think there's a universal appeal there.
But there's also, I was going to say, an undercurrent. I'll just drop the under. There is a current.
Absolutely.
Of violence that runs through the imagery, not just of this song and its video, but this whole drill music scene, as they're calling it. This is kind of like an early 21st century update of gangster rap, right?
Sure. So drill music is sort of what they're deeming this whole Chicago movement. So Chief Keef, you know, Dirk, Reese, Sasha Go Hard. It's this whole, you know, movement of kids out there in Chicago. And, you know, anyone who's been watching the news sees that Chicago's really inundated with a lot of gun violence, a lot of it related to gang activity. And, you know, like anything, these kids, these artists, they take their products of their environment. They take what's around them, a lot of violence, a lot of drug dealing, drug usage, etc., and that sort of seeps into the music.
Well, so are we going down the same rabbit hole that we did with NWA and Straight Outta Compton, where, you know, we have to wonder how much is it kids reflecting the reality around them and how much is it sort of glorifying and even participating in that activity?
Certainly. You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of hip-hop pundits would cringe to even compare NWA to something like Chief Keef. I think with NWA, there was still some sort of, I think, sociopolitical discourse. I think a lot of it when it comes to Keef and drill is, it's a lot of glamorization. And, you know, by all means, is the artist definitely the catalyst? Certainly. But I think the media and the industry is as well. I don't know if you read about Pitchfork, actually did an interview with Keef. And as
not
part
just,
of it.
Not just an interview.
As part of it, they took him to the gun range, of all places. And look, we've all been in those meetings when an editor thinks, oh my God, this idea is great. We'll take him to a gun range.
I haven't been in that meeting, Somya.
It's a meeting I have not participated in, but I can only imagine. And, you know, Pitchfork, who is based in Chicago, ended up rescinding that interview because they said, look, in light of what's going on, it's completely insensitive. You know, we shouldn't be promoting this gun imagery, whether it be a part of the music or not.
We're speaking with Somya Krishnamurthy, who writes about hip-hop for outlets like New York Magazine and The Village Voice and MTV and is a regular on Soundcheck. Now, you say, what's going on? What's going on is not just a rising, you know, murder rate associated with gang violence, but a fellow teenage rapper becoming a victim recently.
Yes. Lil Jojo, yes.
Lil Jojo, killed on September 4th. And now, I said before when you mentioned Chief Keef's Interscope deal that there was a follow-up question. My follow-up question is he going to lose his Interscope deal because of his response to Lil Jojo getting killed, which was this really insensitive tweet?
Yeah. So Chief Keef is the master of many things, and social media is not one of them. If anyone follows him on Twitter or Instagram, if they've in fact reinstated his Instagram, because they took it away from him not too long ago, once Lil Jojo passed away, a few hours later, Keef said basically something the extent of, he had it coming, you know, he tried to be like me and my crew, and this is what happens to you. And interestingly, the Chicago police took that seriously, and they were investigating, and it became this big uproar. You know, at the end of the day, hip-hop's funny, where so much of the glamorization of violence or misogyny or this sort of gun-toting larger-than-life gangster image is great when it's selling records. Mm-hmm. But when a record label's investment becomes a liability, that's when things have to stop. And it's sad because, you know, that shouldn't be, you know, the litmus test of whether, you know, the kids are being taken care of or not. I think with Keef, he's okay for now. But in the long term, he's going to have to distance his ties to the streets, because at the end of the day, you know, that can be a liability to your career as well as your life.
Yeah. As the rapper Lil Jojo found out. So Chief Keef sends out this really inappropriate tweet, and then comes back on Twitter and says his account was hacked and he's actually praying for the family. So it sounds like somebody got to him and said, dude, you got to make this right.
Right. I mean, I think that's sort of the PR go-to for all celebrities. Anytime anything leaks or disseminates that shouldn't, my phone got hacked. Yeah. I mean, I feel like celebrities have the worst phone passwords ever. They're always getting hacked. I think Keef, at the end of the day, too, look, he's a young boy. He's 17 years old. You know, he's in so much more fame and money that he could have ever dreamed of when he was, you know, making these songs in his basement with his friends. He had no idea he'd be on an international stage. So there's also baby steps. You know, he's still going to have to go through a lot of the polishing and the refinement that comes with not just being a celebrity, but being an adult. So I think we also have to understand that he's still a kid at the end of the day.
Right. We've been speaking with Soumya Krishnamurthy about the 17-year-old rapper whose song I Don't Like recently appeared on Kanye West's compilation album Cruel Summer with his Good Music crew. And Soumya, thanks for bringing us up to speed.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Here's another song from our musical guest, the pianist and keyboardist Marco Benevento. This originally appears on the new album Tiger Face. The song is called Limbs of a Pine. It's Marco Benevento in the Soundcheck studio. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tune in tomorrow night for coverage of the vice presidential debate. Then we're back on Friday. Join us at 2 p.m. Eastern on soundcheck.org for a live audio stream of our interview with Kirk Hammett. Yes, that Kirk Hammett, lead guitarist of Metallica, arguably the biggest heavy metal band of all time. But did you know he's a collector of horror movie memorabilia? Are you surprised? You can hear Kirk Hammett of Metallica talking about his Donnie Darko bunny suit, his new book, Too Much Horror Business, and much more, live tomorrow at 2 Eastern on soundcheck.org. Then at 9 p.m. on the radio this Friday, another nomination for The Musician in Chief, our quest to elect a musician to this nation's highest office. Also, a visit from composer and founding member of the Velvet Underground, John Cale. That's Friday on Soundcheck. See you all back here then. I'm John Schaefer.